106.6.
Okay, that was Pet Shop Boys with One More Chance. I'm Don Robinson, and listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and really deserves your attention, so go and have a look. Also, if you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. Okay, in the show this week, in the first hour, it's all about films. We start off with a review of the film Melancholia on Blu-ray. Then we have the top 10 movie charts. Then we look at the new cinema releases, including Young Adult, starring Charlize Theron, and Man on a Ledge with Sam Worthington. Then we have, in the last section of the hour, we have some new DVD releases, including Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy with Gary Oldman, and Drive with Ryan Gosling. I think I've got the right Ryan there. So we start off with Melancholia on Blu-ray, which is one of the few films I wish I'd seen on the big screen. It starts with a number of very slow-mo shots with nothing making particular sense at this point, even if I was to try and describe them, such as a horse falling down backwards, a woman walking across a golf course with a child on her back, and her feet going down into the ground, and Kirsten Dunst holding up her hands to see electricity shooting out of them, until eventually a huge planet crashes into and through the Earth, wiping it out. Deep bass rumbles kick in and the words Lars von Trier's Melancholia appear, and then the film proper starts. Part 1, Justine, opens up, and she, played by Kirsten Dunst, is travelling with her new husband Michael, Alexander Skarsgård, in a stretched limo down a winding road which is clearly not going to work out. When they eventually arrive, about 2 hours late, Justine is captivated by a red star in the sky. She asks scientist brother-in-law John, Kiefer Sutherland, to identify it, and he replies that it's Antares, the main star of the Scorpio constellation. They go in and the wedding dinner takes place, during which speeches are made, and after Justine's father Dexter, John Hurt, starts to embarrass ex-wife Gabby, Charlotte Rampling, the latter stands up and says she doesn't believe in marriage, so that's why she wasn't there at the wedding. Ooh, bit of a row developing there. This part shows moments of annoying relatives mixing in with the first moments of a new and burgeoning marriage, and the fact that Justine just doesn't appear at all happy at her own wedding. But what's behind the anguish of this advertising executive? Then comes part two, Claire. And she, Charlotte Gainsbourg, is talking about a planet called Melancholia, which keeps thinking is going to collide with Earth, yet John tells her it hasn't hit the other planets that it's passed by, and isn't scheduled to collide with our own either. In this segment, Justine is completely different. She's sleepy all the time, almost hypnotic, for reasons which will become clear when you watch it. And Claire can't even help her to take a bath to wake her up. They all sit down to dinner for the meatloaf which Claire has made, but she can't take a single bite and retires to bed. Their son Leo, Cameron Spur, goes to Justine and tells her about Melancholia, which she says has been hiding behind the sun until now. As the planet gets ever closer and closer to Earth, Claire becomes increasingly anxious about it, even to the point of searching online and printing out Earth and Melancholia's Dance of Death, about how it'll circle our planet according to its rotation, and hit us squarely on the back of the head. Overall, Melancholia is a film to sit back and relax to, and let what happens happen. Yes, it's slow moving, but if you enjoy that sort of film, then this is a must. Sure, there could be more to the plot, but then it's mostly a slice of life drama that plays on while the fate of the world may or may not be affected in the long run. Now, I rarely go to the cinema in these days, but I wish I'd gone to see this one on the big screen. I hope they do show it at some point again. Presented in the original theatrical ratio and in 1080p high definition, the picture is simply unsurpassable and is striking throughout with no flaws whatsoever. I can see how it would look incredible on the big screen, and as I say, I'd love to see it that way. Audio-wise, the film is presented in DTS 5.1 HD Master Audio, and for most of the time, it's a dialogue-based piece, but a number of times it'll drop in a blast of Wagner, as well as deep bass rumblings as the planet Melancholia rears its ugly head. The extras are as follows. We have start off with the making of Melancholia, a four-part piece, mixing in film clips with chat, mostly from the cast and crew, starting with About Melancholia, it's about 11 and a half minutes, where the discussion of the movie goes very deep, more so than I can describe in a review because it would give spoilers. Then comes Visual Effects, about 7 minutes, which makes for a particularly stunning extra, followed by The Universe, 4 minutes, which discusses the realistic physics of the movie and the visual style, 9.5 minutes, where Lars von Trier tells us why he chose Wagner's music to go with his movie, along with plenty other treats to discover. Then there's Film Bayen, the new mecca of cinema, which is 54 minutes. Now, Film Bayen is a cinema town created by Lars von Trier and producer Peter Albeck Jensen. They founded together a company which regroups all the cinema business industry. The documentary retraces the Film Bayen story and how it functions and the artistic and economic issues that arise. The place itself is a former military base which houses many film-related companies, and many films and TV series have been shot there. Then we have some interviews. There are three here. There's a brief Q&As, but without the Q, oddly, with Lars von Trier, about 6 minutes, one with Kirsten Dunst for about 4 minutes, and one with Charlotte Gainsbourg, which is nearly 5 minutes. And then we have a 2-minute trailer, and for a trailer it doesn't spoil things, which is quite a rarity. Okay, so scores on the doors. We have, 8 out of 10 for the film itself. But I think it's the kind of film I really need to sit down and watch again, because when I was watching it the first time, I was just sort of, I had half an eye on trying to do a review at the same time. I think if I was just to sit down and watch it again, I would be worth at least a 9. Picture, a solid 10 out of 10. Sound, 8 out of 10. So normally, mostly a dialogue film would just get 7 out of 10, but the deep bass really swings it to an 8. Extras, just a mere 4. But overall, a good 8 out of 10, I think, for this one. Okay, now we have a bit of music now, and just before we have the top 10 movie charts. And there's some music. Well, The L Project has brought together the UK's most talented lesbian artists to record and release a single, It Does Get Better, which will help raise awareness and money for charities which work to prevent LGBT bullying among young people. The track, written by Georgie Payne, is set to be a positive message to anyone who experiences the struggles that can come with being different. Every single artist, promoter, sponsor, supporter, everyone involved with The L Project has given up their time and come together because they believe passionately in giving hope to young LGBT people that it gets better. They say thank you to everyone involved so far. This would not happen without you. I've taken that from their Facebook page. So just go to facebook.com/The L Project. There'll be a link to this on the DVD Fever Show Facebook page as well. The single is released on February the 11th. So here's the song, It Does Get Better. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was the L Project and the song It Does Get Better. Okay, and now you're back with the DVD Fever Show on North Manchester 106.6 with me, Dom Robinson. And in this section, we go through the movie charts. And as regular people know, I go through the top 10 US movie charts here because, I say it was easier to get hold of those than it was the UK ones. But to be honest, I find them a bit more interesting in general anyway. You certainly get an idea of what's coming up rather than just the same old things again and again. Number one, we have Underworld Awakening, which took $25.4 million. And it's the second sequel in the Underworld series, with Underworld Rise of the Lycans being the prequel to the first film, Underworld, and Underworld Evolution being the first sequel. Get that? Good. Kate Beckinsale, star of the first two films, returns in a lead role as a vampire warrioress, Selene, who escapes imprisonment to find herself in a world where humans have discovered the existence of both vampire and lycan clans, and are conducting an all-out war to eradicate both immortal species. 6 months after the events of Underworld Evolution, Selene, Kate Beckinsale, was captured by humans. Eventually, both government officials and the public learn about the existence of the two immortal species of vampires and lycans, werewolves. A crusade, an all-out war has begun. Study and eradicate. After being imprisoned in cryogenic suspension for 12 years, Selene manages to escape the facility. Explosions, action, shouting. While I haven't seen the third film, which featured Rhona Mitra instead of Kate Beckinsale, the first two were entertaining pieces of nonsense which didn't stretch the intelligence. This looks like it'll be more of the same, basically. Worth a watch if there's nothing else on the big screen that you fancy. Number two, we have Red Tails, which took $19.1 million. And Red Tails is based on the Tuskegee Airmen, a group of African-American servicemen during World War II, and it's the first Lucasfilm production since Radioland Murders in 1994, not associated with the Indiana Jones or Star Wars franchises. The movie stars Cuba Gooding Jr., who previously starred in The Tuskegee Airmen, an HBO made-for-TV film about the same group of pilots, in his first theatrical film for 5 years, and also Terrence Howard, who portrayed a Tuskegee pilot in Heart's War. There's no UK release date for this film yet, and what starts off feeling like a black version of Memphis Belle ends up being one of those life-affirming pieces of nonsense with all the "hey, aren't we great" attitude, getting to the point where I was nearly sick. Number three, we have Contraband, which took $12.2 million. Now, Mark Wahlberg leads the cast of Contraband, an action thriller about a man trying to stay out of a world he worked hard to leave behind, and the family he'll do anything to protect. Set in New Orleans, the film explores the cutthroat underground world of international smuggling, full of desperate criminals and corrupt officials, high stakes and big payoffs where loyalty rarely exists, and death is one wrong turn away. Get your words out, Dominic. Chris Faraday, Wahlberg, long ago abandoned his life for crime, but after his brother-in-law, Andy, Caleb Landry Jones, botches a drug deal for his ruthless boss, Tim Briggs, Giovanni Ribisi, get me words out again, Chris is forced back into doing what he does best, running Contraband to settle Andy's debt. Chris is a legendary smuggler and quickly assembles a crew with the help of best friend Sebastian, Ben Foster, to head to Panama and return with millions in counterfeit bills. Things quickly fall apart, and with only hours to reach the cash, Chris must use his rusty skills to successfully navigate a treacherous criminal network of brutal drug lords, cops and hitmen before his wife Kate Beckinsale turning up again, and her sons become their target. Now, the trailer of this makes it look fairly pedestrian, so it's a shame. It seemed like it had sort of, you know, fairly decent promise, but I wouldn't make it first choice for the cinema at all. Number four, we have Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which took $10.5 million. In a vase in a closet, a couple of years after his father died in 9/11, 9-year-old Oscar discovers a key. The key belonged to his father, he's sure of that. But which of the New York's 162 million locks does it open? You can tell how long this film's going to be, don't you? So begins a quest that takes Oscar, inventor, letter writer and amateur detective, across New York's five boroughs and into the jumbled lives of friends, relatives and complete strangers. He gets heavy boots, he gives himself little bruises, and he inches ever nearer to the heart of a family mystery that stretches back 50 years. Will it take him any closer to, or even further from, his lost father? God, I'm boring myself just talking about it. Well, this is another film just to make you feel completely sick, as it's filled with American sickly sweet, everything is great kind of nonsense. They make a big thing about 9/11, and then it turns into a film about triumphing over defeat, and, well, watch the trailer, but don't blame me if you go to see it afterwards and you hate it. Number five, we have Haywire. This dynamic action thriller, directed by Steven Soderbergh, boasts a talented cast that includes Channing Tatum, Ewan McGregor, Michael Fassbender from X-Men First Class, Antonio Banderas, Bill Paxton, Michael Douglas, Michael Angenaro from Almost Famous, and introduces mixed martial arts superstar, Gina Carano as Mallory Kane, in a demanding lead role that has her performing her own high adrenaline stunts. Mallory Kane is a highly trained operative who works for a government security contractor in the dirtiest, most dangerous corners of the world. After successfully freeing a Chinese journalist held hostage, she is double-crossed and left for dead by someone close to her in her own agency. Suddenly, the target of skilled assassins who know her every move, Mallory must find the truth in order to stay alive. Using her Black Ops military training, she devises an ingenious and dangerous trap. But when things go haywire, Mallory realises she'll be killed in the blink of an eye unless she finds a way to turn the tables on a ruthless adversary. And watching the trailer, Gina Carano looks damn hot as Mallory Kane, and overall it looks like a, you know, solid action movie, so definitely worth a look. Number six, we have a Beauty and the Beast, the re-release of the 1991 animated film. I bet that's come out in 3D, and if it hasn't already, unless I mentioned it here before and I've forgotten, which I usually do with CGI films. Number seven, we have Joyful Noise. Now, Joyful Noise is the... Try and get excited about it, Dom. Joyful Noise is the story of a small-town choir out to win a national competition despite overwhelming odds. No, I can't get excited about it. A story of faith and determination by the choir leaders, Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton. Jesus. And the... Oh, bet he's in there too. And the young talent who give their all to win God's praise and beat the competition for the grand prize. What's another film with American sickly, sweet, affirming, life-affirming nonsense, but this time with a Michael Jackson song and a religious angle. So many reasons to avoid it like the plague. Number 8, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Number 9, Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows. And number 10, the remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Okay, we'll have a bit more music, and then in a moment we'll be having the look at the new cinema releases out this Friday. So it's 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And in this section, we're looking at the new cinema releases, starting with Young Adult. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say in the last section was that all the trailers for everything you hear about on the show, they're all on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. So we start off with Young Adult. Now, Mavis Gary, a writer of teen literature, returns to a small hometown to relive her glory days and attempt to reclaim a happily married high school sweetheart. When returning home proves more difficult than she thought, Mavis forms an unusual bond with a former classmate who hasn't quite gotten over high school either. It's directed by Jason Reitman from a screenplay written by Diablo Cody. What a bizarre name. Reitman and Cody worked together previously on the 2007 film Juno, which, to be honest, I didn't like that much. It had Ellen Page in it, which is always worth watching for many reasons. But the film itself was just a bit... Young Adult itself had a limited release on December the 9th in America and a wide release on the 16th to generally positive reviews. Now, starring Charlize Theron, I've heard good things about this, and it looks really brilliant, so I do want to see this. So you can watch the trailer for that on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. Also out this Friday, we have Man on a Ledge. Now, an ex-cop turned con threatens to jump to his death from a Manhattan hotel rooftop. The nearest New York police officer immediately responds to a screaming woman and calls dispatch. More officers arrive with SWAT and tactical command, along with firefighters. The police then dispatches a female police psychologist personally, requested to talk him down from the ledge. However, things aren't as straightforward and as clear-cut as they might appear to be. Starring Sam Worthington, Elizabeth Banks, Jamie Bell and Ed Harris, the trailer shows that while he's up there, other people he knows are going to orchestrate a heist which will hopefully prove him innocent. Actually looks pretty good too. Also out this Friday we have Carnage. Now when two grade school boys get into a confrontation in the park that results in one boy hitting the other in the mouth with a stick, their parents meet in a Brooklyn apartment to discuss the matter. The parents of the boy wielding the stick, Alan and Nancy Cowan, Christoph Waltz and Kate Winslet, visit the home of Michael and Penelope Longstreet, John C. Reilly and Jodie Foster, who were the parents of the boy who was struck. The meeting is initially intended to be a short visit, but various circumstances, such as Nancy vomiting in the Longstreet's living room and Alan's numerous cell phone conversations, continue to draw it out. At first, a verbal exchange between the two married couples maintains a high civility factor, but when the differences between them start to emerge, subtly at first and eventually glaringly, the couples begin to turn on each other and finally each on their own spouse. As their civility and inhibition washes away, aided by a bottle of Scotch whisky, the geniality vanishes, descending fully into verbal warfare with all their character flaws laid bare. Now, based on a play, it shows and looks okay, but nothing more. Not a first choice for the big screen for me. Next up we have Journey 2, The Mysterious Island. Now, just looking at the title, I thought, Journey 2, where was Journey 1? But then you look a bit further and it's also known as Journey to the Mysterious Island. Now, being directed by Brad Peyton, it's a sequel to the 2008 film Journey to the Centre of the Earth, that one with Brendan Fraser. I was going to say Brendan Gleeson then, but different actor altogether. But it's one of those films which just for kids and it's just looked rubbish. Anyway, Sean Anderson accompanies new stepfather Hank to find his grandfather Alexander, who went missing while exploring a lost island. With the help of Gabato and Kaylani, they reach the island and find Alexander. After a few harrowing encounters, they escape from the island on the submarine Nautilus, returning home. Starring Dwayne Johnson, Vanessa Hudgens and Michael Caine, it's definitely a film for kids. Oh, and older blokes who want to see Miss Hudgens looking pretty, pretty hot. Finally, one film you just gotta miss, Jack and Jill. Now, Jack Sadelstein, Adam Sandler, is a successful advertising executive in Los Angeles with a beautiful wife, Katie Holmes, and kids who dreads one event each year, the Thanksgiving visit of his identical twin sister, Jill, also played by Adam Sandler. Jill's neediness and passive-aggressiveness is maddening to Jack, turning his normally tranquil life upside down. Also starring Dana Carvey, Rob Schneider, and lots of cameos including Al Pacino, Johnny Depp and Shaquille O'Neal, the premise sounds utterly appalling. After watching the trailer, I can confirm that it is. Okay, so that's your new films out this at the cinema this Friday. We'll have a bit of music in a moment, and then we'll be having all the DVDs that are out this week and Blu-rays even. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, and this last section of the hour, we're going to look at the DVDs and Blu-rays out this week, starting with Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Now, the film finds George Smiley, Gary Oldman, a recently retired MI6 agent, doing his best to adjust to a life outside the Secret Service. However, when a disgraced agent reappears with information concerning a mole at the heart of the service, Smiley is drawn back into the murky field of espionage. Tasked with investigating which of his trusted former colleagues has chosen to betray him and their country, Smiley narrows the search to four suspects, all experienced, skilled and successful agents, but past histories, rivalries and friendships make it far from easy to pinpoint the man who is eating away at the heart of the British establishment. An acting masterclass from the creme de la creme of British film, Colin Firth, Tom Hardy, Mark Strong, Benedict Cumberbatch, and inspired direction from Let the Right One In's Thomas Alfredson, make this a gripping, intense adaptation of John le Carré's classic spy novel essential viewing, it says here. That said, the trailer does look very intriguing. It's certainly something that I want to see. The Blu-ray features on it, we've got a commentary with Gary Oldman and the director Thomas Alfredson, a John le Carré interview, deleted scenes, a Smiley featurette, Inside the Circus featurette, Shadow World featurette, John le Carré featurette, featurette about everybody. Well, no, hang on. Interviews with Gary Oldman, Colin Firth, Tom Hardy, director Thomas Alfredson and screenwriter Peter Strawn. There's a UK premiere feature, all more featurettes. A Sky Movies featurette, a photo gallery and trailers. And Breathe. Next out we have Drive, now directed by Nicholas Winding Refn and the winner of the Best Director Award at the 2011 Cannes Film Festival. Drive is the story of a Hollywood stunt driver by day, Ryan Gosling, a loner by nature who moonlights as a top-notch getaway driver for hire in the criminal underworld. He finds himself a target for some of LA's most dangerous men after agreeing to aid the husband of a beautiful neighbour, Irene, Carey Mulligan. When the job goes dangerously awry, the only way he can keep Irene and her son alive is to do what he does best, drive. Now, watching the trailer, it looks okay, but I'm not completely sold on it, so it wouldn't be my first choice of films to watch. It just doesn't particularly grab me like a film should. And also this week we have Star Trek The Next Generation, The Next Level. Now, this is a bit of a curiosity, this, because on Amazon it's just £6.99, and what do you get for £6.99 on Blu-ray? Not a lot, unless it's in the bargain bins. But I'll explain all. For the first time ever, you can experience some of the show's most important and beloved episodes in glorious 1080p higher definition, with true high-definition visual effects and digitally remastered 7.1 sound, or with the original audio. You'll witness new picture detail and depth you haven't seen before, and enjoy spectacular visual effects that have been painstakingly recreated from original film elements, definitely not up-converted from videotape. This taste of TNG is a glimpse of what the upcoming complete season Blu-ray releases of The Next Generation will be like, and it will transport you to the next level, it says here. In other words, it's just make a bit of money before they bring out the Blu-rays, as they say. But no, they don't say that at all. I'm talking out my backside. Also, this week got Great Expectations. Don't come again, even if she begs. Forget about this house and everyone in it. I presume that's a quote from this, because I've never seen it, to be honest. But the description is that on a cold winter's day, orphan Pip has a terrifying encounter with an escaped convict. Pip's innocent act of kindness towards this man is to have far-reaching consequences for them both. Meanwhile, Miss Havisham, is the reclusive owner of the grand and dilapidated Satis House, has requested Pip's presence as a playmate to her beautiful but cold-hearted daughter Estella. Then Pip's life is suddenly transformed by the generosity of a secret benefactor. Pip abandons his loving home on the marshes for a life of a London gentleman, hoping to win Estella's hand. But the encounters of his childhood are to taunt him and shape the man he becomes. Sarah Phelps' gripping adaptation brings out the very best even, of Dickens' masterpiece, part thriller, part mystery, and with a powerful love story at its heart. Also this week we have Crazy Stupid Love. Now 40-something, straight-laced Cal Weaver, Steve Carell, is living the dream. Good job, nice house, great kids, and married to his high school sweetheart. But when Cal learns that his wife Emily, Julianne Moore, has cheated on him and wants a divorce, his perfect life quickly unravels. Worse, in today's single world, Cal, who hasn't dated in decades, stands out as the epitome of unsmooth. Now spending his free evening sulking alone in a local bar, the hapless Cal is taken on as wingman and protege to handsome 30-something player Jacob Palmer, Ryan Gosling. In an effort to help Cal get over his wife and start living his life, Jacob opens Cal's eyes to the many options before him. Flirty women, manly drinks, and a sense of style that can't be found at Supercuts or The Gap. Cal and Emily aren't the only ones looking for love in what might be all the wrong places. Cal's 13-year-old son, Robbie, is crazy about his 17-year-old babysitter, Jessica, who harbours a crush on Cal, as if. And despite Cal's makeover and his many new conquests, the one thing that can't be made over is his heart. Which seems to be leading him back to where he began. Also starring Marissa Tomei and Emma Stone. Watching the trailer, I got a couple of laughs out of it, but there's nothing in there that made me want to sit through the entire movie. The extras on this disc, we got Steve and Ryan walking to a bar. Wow, sounds thrilling. The player meets his match and deleted scenes. And also this week, we got What's Your Number? Now, Anna Faris is Ali Darling, a young woman who decides after hitting the number of 20 lovers to revisit all of her ex-boyfriends in the hope of finding a man of her dreams. A sassy and hilarious comedy of one woman's unconventional search for love includes all the bits too rude for the cinema. They always say that, don't they? And there's usually just a bit of extra swearing and just rubbish, basically. And, I mean, the trailer just sees Anna Faris as a self-obsessed character meeting up with all, you know, past loves and clearly realising that the guy who lives across the hall is her dream man after all. Boring as... Is it at the time? Special features include the extended and theatrical version of the extended and theatrical version of the feature. Thank you. Deleted scenes, gag reel, theatrical trailer. And the other stuff that's out this week, we have, new films and main releases. We've got Adam Resurrected, Beyond, Cash, A Bigger Splash. Which sounds a bit rude, but it's one of the films from BFI that have come out on Blu-ray and DVD, so it must be good, I suppose. Good Time Max with James Franco, who was not that recently in 127 Hours, but it was recently on TV, and God, to be honest, it just pretty much bored the pants off me for most of the time until he actually did cut his arm off. And then the last half hour was worth a watch, but the rest of it was just, you know, when it comes around again, just watch the last half hour, basically. Then we have A Perfect Sense with Ewan McGregor. I think it's like the one with Dennis Lawson, his uncle as well, it might be. Stalker, Stay Cool, Win-Win, and Yamada, Way of the Samurai. Some TV series and other stuff out this week. We've got Ben-Hur, the complete series, that thing which has been on Channel 5 recently. The Cleveland Show Season 2, I've not even seen Season 1 yet. Dynasty Season 7, Hacks, that thing that was on Channel 4 on New Year's Day, which was just pretty dull, to be frank. The Office and American Workplace Season 6. The Only Way is Essex Series 3. God, who's buying that? Samurai Girls. And 6, A Grand Illusion and Pieces of 8 Live. And some Blu-ray premieres. We have an Affair to Remember. Kane Toad's 3D, The Conquest. Cleopatra, Dark Star. Highlander Endgame, Lady and the Tramp. And Rolling Thunder with William Devane. They also have, they've got, Fox have released An Affair to Remember. And Cleopatra for about £11 each, but they also put out all the Alien films separately as well, and they're all about £11 each as well, which normally would sound like a pretty decent price for a Blu-ray Aliens film, but particularly the first two. But they're all out in that massive box set which came out the Christmas before last. That was about £50 at the time, and now it's down to about £15 on Amazon. And then like a repackaged version of that, which I don't think has all the extras, that was for £14. So why on earth would you spend £44 on them separately when about £15 gets you the absolute mega box set? Ridiculous. So that's everything for the first hour, everything to do with films. And I'm going to finish off, coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with the top 10 games charts. But to finish this first hour, I'm going to play a bit of music. Now, I've never played any classical music on this show before, but I'm going to indulge in a bit of music. It's actually used at the very end of Die Hard 2. Well, over the end credits, because that's what you have at the end of a film. And it's one of my favourite pieces of music. And, well, it needs no introduction, as I say, but it does. It just needs a little bit, because you need to know what it's called. And so it's basically, well, I'll say no more about it. I love it. I hope you love it. It's by Sibelius, and it's called Finlandia. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was AC/DC talking about their big balls. And this is second hour of the show. It's all about video games and TV, starting with the top 10 games charts, some new video games releases, and some video games news. Then on some TV stuff, we'll have a look at, back at Birdsong, Mad Dogs, and more. A look ahead to some more programmes coming up in the next week, and also some TV news. Or will we? Will we? You never know. We may do. You'll have to wait and see. First of all, we have the top 10 games charts. Now we start off with the number one, obviously, because that's what goes at the start. And it's FIFA 12. The number two, the Elder Scrolls, it's like a rehash of what was before Christmas. The Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim, that's number two. Number three is Just Dance 3 Special Edition. Number four, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Number five, Battlefield 3. You're spotting a pattern here. Number six, Samba Fitness. Number seven, Saints Row the Third. Everything is a three. Except for number eight, which is Zumba Fitness 2. Number nine is Rayman Origins. And number 10, Rage. And there's re-entries at number 34 for Skate 3. Number 35 for Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine. And number 36 for ABBA You Can Dance. Now some video games releases coming out this Friday. There's quite a lot to get through, so I'll mention them in two parts. So we'll start off with all the gameplay footage for the majority of these games and whatnot on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. I nearly forgot the name of it then. We'll start off with Metal Gear Solid HD, the collection. From the critically acclaimed director Hideo Kojima, Metal Gear Solid HD offers a handful of the most popular Metal Gear Solid titles from the past in true HD for the first time ever, featuring three complete games: Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty, Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater, and Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker. The HD collection offers old and new fans a chance to experience the epic gameplay, design, and storytelling of the MGS franchise. The series is a seminal work of Hideo Kojima, Japan's master game creator, and the progenitor of the stealth action game genre. The series has become a global phenomenon with over 27 million copies sold worldwide. The player controls a secret agent from an elite special forces unit who is sent on solo sneaking missions through enemy installations, vast jungles, and sometimes even into the thick of battle. Alone and surrounded by the enemy, even a special forces agent will find it tough to come out alive, but that is the secret behind the series' popularity: the cerebral challenge of figuring out how to avoid combat and the thrill of sneaking through the enemy territory undetected. The MGS series is also known for its storyline, which blends seamlessly with the gameplay. The scenarios are based on extensive research and incorporate the drama of actual developments in society. These elements have made MGS what it is today, a mature work of entertainment that transcends national borders and the confines of video games, and one of the leading products of the Japanese content business. Also this week, we've got Final Fantasy 13 2, which is also available as a limited collector's edition. Now, the Metal Gear Solid, that was PS3 and Xbox 360, as is this game. There's a limited collection on Amazon. They have an exclusive, unique Null weapon downloadable content, which is a bonus if you pre-order it, apparently. Now, Final Fantasy 13 2 is a direct sequel to Final Fantasy 13, unsurprisingly, a part of the Fabula Nova Crystallis Final Fantasy series. Developed by Square Enix and Tri-Ace, the game takes place three years after the events of Final Fantasy XIII and depicts the story of Seraph Farron's journey across time and space to prevent the end of the world while searching for a missing sister, Lightning. As a result of Cocoon's fall at the end of Final Fantasy XIII, some of its surviving citizens now reside on Grand Pulse, after the world has adopted a new dating system since the fall of the Cocoon, AF, or Afterfall. And in the 3 years since, new towns and cities have been established. While searching for Lightning, Sarah and Noel will travel to old and new places on Pulse and in Cocoon. head of water. As you travel through time, some locations from 13 will show change in appearance. Blimey. Eden is no longer the capital, and the Sanctum is no more. The city of Academia is now the capital, and the new provisional government is run by the Academy, a scientific expedition group wishing to build a world that doesn't rely on the Falsi. I presume that's how you pronounce it. Playing as lightning, there is a mysterious new world called Valhalla, the realm of death and chaos, at the edge of time in the distant future, ruled by the goddess Etro. I hope that all made sense to you, because it doesn't make a jot of sense to me. Okay, excuse me. You can tell I don't play those series of games anymore. We'll have some more new releases in a moment after we have a bit of music. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6. And in this section, we'll have a look at some more video games out this Friday, starting with Soul Calibur 5 on the Xbox 360 and PS3. And Soul Calibur 5 is the newest installment of its multi-million-selling weapons-based fighting series, the Xbox 360 and PS3. It delivers exhilarating 3D fighting mechanics, breathtaking visuals, and new characters, as well as expanding the online and character creation modes. And if you pre-order it, you can receive the bonus character Dampier. Now, Soul Calibur 5 picks up 17 years after the events of Soul Calibur 4, with new heroes and returning warriors clashing in an epic showdown between good and evil. I don't know why there's a time lapse between the two, because they always look exactly the same. The tale of Patroclus, son of Sophoteer Alexandra. I mean, we don't get Sophoteer anymore. She was hot. Anyway, the tale unfolds as his family's destiny intertwines with the Soul Swords, with a series of revolutionary 8-way run allowing for true 3D movement during matches, a refined battle system and stunning graphics. Soul Calibur 5 will be the top game of 2012, for anyone looking for a knockdown, drag-out fight. And there are some new Soul Calibur 5 characters, and I'll give a special mention to one, Ezio Auditore from the critically acclaimed Assassin's Creed series. He's going to be a playable guest. The monumental collaboration will let players control Ezio and his wide range of assassination tools, including a Roman longsword, stiletto, crossbow, hidden gun, and his trademark hidden blade. Also out this Friday, we've got Never Dead. Now, over 500 years have passed since a mortal named Bryce Boltzmann endured a life-altering tragedy at the hands of Astaroth, the Demon King. His wife murdered, left defeated and rendered immortal, he now moves through life without aspirations other than where he will find his next drink. Lending a hand to the clandestine group, the National Anti-Demon Agency, NADA, he pursues redemption through... Start again. Lending a hand to the clandestine group, National Anti-Demon Agency, NADA, he pursues redemption through the extermination of demonic forces within the modern-day world, along with his agency partner, Arcadia. Get your words out. Never Dead is a third-person action shooter offering a radically new game experience within the genre based on decapitation and regeneration. Lose any limb, and you still have the ability to endure the fights as death has already passed you by. Now, I've seen that it's some gameplay footage for this, and it looks alright. It's more of a trailer than... I linked it on the Facebook page, but it's more of a trailer than a proper gameplay, really. But have a look anyway. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Also, it is Resident Evil Revelations on the Nintendo 3DS. And Resident Evil Revelations returns a herald's return to classic Resident Evil gameplay. Well, not really, because it's a third person shooter, not the way it was in the original games where it was sort of single fixed point cameras. Besides, it's packed with terrifying moments and an intense canon storyline, all in stunning 3D. Set in 2005, Resident Evil Revelations contains new content and answers questions and reveals truths from the main Resident Evil storyline between Resident Evil 4 and 5. The all-new narrative builds tension and the fast-paced action delivers a constant fear of the unknown, all brought to life in 3D. With a mix of favourite faces, such as Jill Valentine and Chris Redfield, as well as mysterious new characters and enemies, you'll be constantly wondering who to trust. Jill and Chris, both members of the Bioterrorism Security Assessment Alliance, BSAA, have new partners, Parker Luciani and Jessica Sherawat. Each team must investigate different angles of the bioterrorism threat in Europe, at the same time as working out how their bioterrorist enemies are able to stay one step ahead of them. Explore a variety of mountain and coastal locations, as well as a dark and deserted ocean liner to discover the truth. With horrors and unknown threats around each corner, you'll need nerves of steel to search claustrophobic rooms and caves. Resident Evil Revelations has been specifically designed to make best use of the Nintendo 3DS capabilities. Use a touchscreen for quick direct weapon selection and item usage, while the shooting system has also been enhanced to bring you right into the game, allowing you to switch from third-person to first-person perspective. The game is also compatible with a new slider pad, a second circle pad, and two more shoulder buttons. Perhaps they're called shoulder pads. But I'm Tish. Thank you. Enabling you to interact with the environments in new ways. In true survival horror style, you'll need to endure time-sensitive challenges, solve puzzles and escape deadly horrors, from sinking ships to a zombie onslaughts. Utilise a Nintendo 3DS touchscreen to crack puzzles and store items that don't fit in your inventory, as well as keeping track of locked doors you can't open, or you can't yet open, in the game notes. Armed with a Genesis scanner, you can now analyse enemies as well as exploring areas and revealing hidden items. Okay, so that's all the games that are out this Friday. And we'll have a bit of music first, and then we'll have some video games news. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show. It's me, Don Robinson, and you're live on Manchester's 106.6. In this section, we'll have a look at the TV programmes watched in the past week. Well, I say week, it's the last couple of weeks, really. And we start off with Tall Hot Blonde, which was on just under a couple of weeks ago. And it was a true story of a beautiful teenage vixen who uses internet game rooms to lure men into a cyberspace web. When she discovers she's been double-crossed and lied to by one of her victims, she wants revenge and unleashes a fantasy online that escalates into real-life murder. All because of a girl no one ever met in person. Drawing on exclusive access to internet messages, secret notes and letters, as well as police evidence files and exclusive prison interviews, Tall Hot Blonde details the horrific results of what can happen when people lie online. And the voiceover says he was cyber-sexed to death by Tall Hot Blonde. Starts off with a guy called Thomas, well, a bit of a loser really, called Thomas Montgomery, telling us how he was sent some bikini pictures by her. And so we told the girl, Jessie, that he was a young Marine and sent her pictures of him as a 30-year-old Tommy, or called Tommy, even though he told her he's 18. They even chatted on the phone a few times. She confessed her deepest secrets to Tommy, and even sent him her underwear. He blurred the lines between reality and fantasy, saying his 46-year-old self was gone, and only the 18-year-old Tommy was still left alive. His wife then intercepted a package from Jesse and basically spilled the beans out to the girl. Brian, the voiceover, called himself Beefcake online, and he consoled Jesse when she told him about the problems with Montgomery. The three worlds collide, and Brian realises she's using him to get back at Montgomery. Tommy and Jesse then said their goodbyes, but they still continued to chat, just as Brian went over to Virginia to meet her, but she called things off before he arrived. It's weird how, though, when they show that Brian had been murdered, the narration still came from the now-dead Brian. So, what was the truth of it all? Well, the real Jesse never wrote a word to Tommy or Brian. The words all came from her mother, as was found when the police went to her house. We eventually saw the real Jesse with her father, but she didn't want to give an interview, and it was announced that she'd cut off contact with her mother. And basically, the whole thing was a massive disappointment. It just sort of went on and on and on, just pretty dull. And it had like a slot on Channel 4 about an hour and a quarter, even though it says it's just over an hour and 20 minutes on the Internet Movie Database. So they must have cut a fair bit out to squeeze it into that slot with adverts. But they can't have cut out anything interesting, because I don't think there was anything worth cutting out anyway. Also, on this past couple of weeks, we've had Mad Dogs, first two episodes of that. And Max Beasley, Philip Glenister, John Sim, and Mark Warren's Holiday from Hell has been extended in a must-see second series of the delectably dark original drama. Now, at first, there was no plot that had been revealed, other than the fact that after Glenister killed the policewoman at the end and then jumped into the pool, which made for the only duff part of the decent series, the other lads decided not to head home, return to help him out, and then more hijinks would ensue. Well, they packed up the €3 million in the car and then just drove off, heading for a ferry from Spain. They certainly couldn't go to the airport and use a passport, but what could they do? especially since they drove back to the villa to pick up Glenister, only to find the late Alvo's boss Dominic standing there and pointing a gun at him. Or at them. Well, they just drove into him and killed him, that's what, but when they leave, they left the gun in Dominic's hands, pointing at the dead female cop, so it just looks like they've killed each other. They then cash in some of the money at a casino, trying to launder it for a while, until two of them get thrown out. Meanwhile, Carmen, Letitia Dallera, a mysterious woman, tells Bax, John Sim, that she knows what they're up to, and she can help them. She changes their money, and then, all of a sudden, their car is burnt right in front of them, and basically they've just changed one set of problems for another set, as the people that this new money belongs to are now chasing them down. Episode 2 showed them splitting up and going their separate ways, for all of 2 minutes, and then they just got back together again. Bax had rampant sex with Carmen, while Philip Glenister pontificated in a church, and the other two just got drunk, basically. It's weird that there's not a lot that seems to happen in Mad Dogs, but it's still a very comfortable watch, and with a fantastic set of key cast members. So, if you've not seen any of it, then you'll have to watch it from the start. But I'm sure you can, catch it online or something. But yeah, it is worth a watch. Just don't expect the Earth. That's all. Also, it's been on now. We've got Birdsong, which is on. Well, it's been on Sundays on 9 o'clock on BBC One. It's an epic love story set against the First World War. Stephen Raisford fights in the terrifying death-filled trenches of northern France. He is haunted by memories of Isabelle Azer, the woman with whom he had an illicit and all-consuming affair during a summer in France before the war. Starring Eddie Redmayne, Clemence Posey, Joseph Moll, Marie-Josée Croze, Matthew Good and Laurent Lafitte. At this point, I have to say I've only seen part one of this series, but the weird thing is, Eddie Redmayne looks like that weird lad from Mad Magazine. I don't know what his name is meant to be, but just Google Mad Magazine. Just go to Google Images, you'll see the one I mean. The romance in 1910 is mixed in with his fighting in battle in 1916 in the First World War and being injured along the way. And that side of things blends together extremely well, but the whole thing is just so bloody slow. I eventually saw through the rest of the episode, but it's so bloody ridiculous. As the guy died in the war, it was laid out amongst the rest of the dead, and then only when one of the soldiers came back to check his body and take his medals did he cough a bit, making the guy realise he's still alive. What a load of old nonsense. Trouble is, now I've seen the first episode, I may as well watch the second one. As much as I can stomach of it. Finally, we also watched We'll Take Manhattan, which was on BBC Four, which was the story of Gene Shrimpton and David Bailey. Gene Shrimpton, I can't remember the name of the guy who played Bailey, but in fact he called himself Bailey or David Bailey. But Karen Gillan played Gene Shrimpton. Now, I never knew much about the two of them anyway, but this didn't really teach me a lot, quite frankly. Just in the programme, well, it was a 90-minute drama, and they met, he took some photos, they have a relationship despite him being married. There's some arguments with Lady Claire Rendlesham, played by Helen McCrory, who fired Bailey and then unfires him. Jean collapsed for some reason, then she was okay again. And it was just photo shoot after photo shoot after photo shoot. The end. Dull as. The only potential reason to watch was Karen Gillan. However, once you've seen 5 minutes of it, you've seen it all. So, if you've not seen it all, and if you've not seen any of it, and you're just wondering whether to actually bother to watch it, don't. It's rubbish. Okay, in a moment we'll have a look at some programmes coming up in the next week. But first of all, we're going to have a bit of music. And we have a brilliant new song from Hue and Cry. Now, I remember the most from the sort of late 80s, early 90s, with songs like... what's it called? I say remember the most, and I believe I've gone and forget what the songs were called. Looking for Linda, Labour of Love, all classics like those. And... this new album, it sort of seemed to have been away for a while, but they've got a new song out called Duty to the Debtor, and it feels like a real return to form for Greg and Pat Kane. And, what can I say, just have a listen to it. It's absolutely fantastic. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, back with the DVD Fever Show, me, Dom Robinson, and it's the final part of the show today. In this last section, we'll be having a look at the TV programmes coming up in the coming week. Starting with A Prisoner's Wives, which is on BBC One tonight at 9 o'clock. Now, as Gemma's perfect life comes crashing down when a devoted husband is arrested for murder, As Gemma learns to navigate the prison system, she meets a group of women who will become increasingly important as she starts to think the unthinkable. Could her husband be a murderer? Starring Andrew Tiernan, Pippa Hayward, Polly Walker, Madeleine Bowyer, Emma Rigby and Jonas Armstrong, he of Robin Hood. It's the trailer looks pretty interesting. I've heard sort of ho-hum things about it, but it's interesting to see Emma Rigby doing, she used to be in Hollyoaks, interesting to see her doing something a bit more adult anyway. But yeah, from what I've seen from the trailer so far, I think it'll be worth a look. So it's one of two new sort of big dramas on BBC One this week, so there's another coming up shortly. But definitely give that a try. So that's BBC One tonight at 9 o'clock. Also on tonight is a repeat. It's well worth watching though. It's a repeat of Sirens, which was on Channel 4 a few months back. This is on E4 at 11 o'clock tonight. The first episode is called Up, Horny, Down. It says it's another chance to see this comedy originally shown on Channel 4. British Comedy Award winner Kayvan Novak, Rhys Thomas and Richard Madden star in a six-part comedy series from Brian Phillips, inspired by the Tom Reynolds book Blood, Sweat and Tea. To the outside world, Stuart, Ashley and Rashid look like angels of mercy. To their colleagues, they're a trio of pedantic know-it-alls. And to the career alcoholics of late-night revelers on the swarming streets of Leeds, they're nothing more than glorified taxi drivers with a drop-off point. Accident and emergency. In the opening episode, the team attend a major road traffic collision, where Stuart takes a radical decision to give an open-heart massage to jumpstart a woman's heart. Back at A&E, the lads feel the effects of the shock and adrenaline and are forced to see the hospital counsellor. It also stars Morven Christie and also stunning Amy Beth Hayes as Sergeant Maxine Fox. So that's well worth watching. Not just for her. Also on this week, the other sort of main drama I was going to mention is Inside Men, which is on BBC One on Thursday at 9 o'clock. It's a drama series about three employees of a security depot who plan a multi-million pound heist. John, the manager of a cash-counting house, faces his worst fear, an armed robbery. So, not a lot to go on in the plot department, it sounds like, but it's got a cracking cast. We've got Stephen McIntosh, Ashley Walters, Warren Brown, Kirsten Waring, who she was in most recently in Top Boy with Ashley Walters as well, and Paul Popplewell and Nicola Walker, who was most recently in Spooks, which came to an end about 2 or 3 months ago. And what was the fate of her? Well, if you've still not watched it, then she died. Anyway, so there you go. So that was Inside Men. So that's on BBC One at 9 o'clock on Thursday. A couple of other things that are on this week. We've got Cutty Sark, National Treasure, on BBC Two, Friday at 9 o'clock. Don't know whether this would normally be my kind of thing, but I've been to see it years ago when I was a kid, so may as well mention it. It's a special programme telling the dramatic story of Cutty Sark, the world-famous clipper ship, from her launch in 1869 to the modern-day conservation work to save her. With unique access to the ship during the conservation project, the film features exclusive interviews with the key people responsible for bringing this national treasure back to life, including HRH, the Duke of Edinburgh, whose affinity with the ship spans more than half a century. Work began to conserve Cutty Sark in 2006, with a vision that was both audacious and controversial, to lift the ship 3 metres into the air and surround her in a sea of glass and steel. But just months into the project, fire broke out, and with one of the most historically significant ships in the world, went up in smoke, or so it seemed. With the damage less serious than first thought, Cutty Sark was not lost. Conservation continues, and is due to be completed in spring 2012, when Her Majesty the Queen will reopen the legendary ship. Hopefully not the hull or something, because then it would drown, and it would sink and everyone in it would drown. And then so the last thing that's coming up, it's a bit short for TV programmes, to be honest. We've got, well, for a film that's worth watching, is the remake of Brighton Rock, which is tucked away in the dead slot of BBC Two on Saturday night at 9 o'clock. Just always seems to be a rating graveyard that time. It seems to be the time of night where the kind of things they just want to get shut of just seem to disappear to. But anyway, it's well worth watching. It says an adaptation of Graham Greene's coming-of-age thriller Brighton Rock, relocated to the mod rocker, divided Brighton of the 60s. After murdering rival gang member Fred Hale, Pinky Brown decides to marry Rose, the only person who can prove he was behind the murder. However, he's up against Hale's sister and Rose's boss, Ida Arnold, who turns detective to discover who is behind her brother's murder. Directed by Rowan Joffe, stars Helen Mirren, John Hurt, Andy Serkis, Sam Riley as Pinky Brown, and Andrea Riseborough as Rose. And she's quite something in this. And she's in... what else is she in? She's in something else that's just completely gone out of my head. But no, because she was on Breakfast recently. But I know what she was in that while ago was the sort of BBC 4 drama about Margaret Thatcher, when she did a cracking portrayal as a young Margaret Thatcher. And I think she beat the pants off Helen Mirren, but anyway. Meryl Streep. Is Helen Mirren? Yeah, she's probably a bit... Well, no, I was going to say she's too old to play her, but then again, Meryl Streep's getting on a bit, isn't she? So, yeah, Andrea Riseborough every time, I think, for that one. Definitely a film worth watching. So that's I've not seen the original, by the way, but I did enjoy this. I think I gave it out 8 out of 10 when I reviewed it on here. So that's BBC Two, 9 o'clock on Saturday. And that's everything for this week. So you can check out all the trailer links and gaming footage on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. I mean, if you've got the website name then. But before we go away, I've got one last song, and it's by a band called Old Suits. It's called God Say You Will. Now, to me, it sounds a little like early New Order, and the Manchester band, and they're playing on Friday the 24th of February at 6:30 at Craak. I've not heard of that place before. Craak in the Northern Quarter, where they'll be launching their debut EP, On Becoming a Ghost. The band is fronted by a good friend of mine, Jenny Gartland, and the rest of the band features Pedro Lax on vocals, guitar and bass, Tom Whitaker on guitars and shaker, Rob Clark on synths and strings, Ryan Hurley on drums and percussion, and Chris Ward on the bass line. You can find out more information about them, just go to facebook.com/oldsuits. There's also a link to their SoundCloud page where you can hear this song and also download it for free. So just, yeah, do check them out. And this song's called Old Suits, God Say You Will. This is 106.6.
106.6.